This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Well, it's great to have Dr. Joseph Salerno with us today. Joe is professor of economics at Pace University in New York City. He's academic vice president of the Mises Institute, editor of the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics. But Joe, I heard a terrible rumor about you. I heard that you're one of those hard-hearted guys who doesn't want to bail out General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford.
Yeah, that's right. That's me. I definitely do not want to bail them out. In particular, I don't want to bail out the union workers that are making $29 and causing these firms to go into bankruptcy when, at the same time, Nissan is opening a new plant and their workers are earning $18.40, and those plants are much more productive because there are fewer union work rules. I also don't want to bail out the job banks, so-called, that the unions have imposed more or less on the companies, which is where workers that have no use in the plants any longer have 4 years of collecting pay just sitting in a building. So, I do not want to bail out high-paid workers. I don't want to bail out inefficient plutocrats who run the big three.
You know, it's interesting. Why is there so much more attention, and I'm all for the attention, needless to say, paid to this probable bailout? And of course, $15 billion or whatever they're talking about is just an infinitesimal part of what they're going to spend eventually to keep these semi-nationalized companies in existence for the UAW and the rest of them. But why is there so much more attention paid to this than to the bailout of the banking industry?
I think it's the history, Lou, and that is that, you know, these were the symbol of American industrial strength in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and now, even in the 80s when Chrysler was bailed out, and Iacocca, one of the first plutocrats in the modern era, was hailed as a hero for turning Chrysler around when he did it, in fact, with taxpayers' money. I think it's the history and the symbolism, which is why libertarians and Austrian economists should really go after this bailout.
Yeah, I agree with you. And tell us about some of the economic consequences of this. What's going to result? I mean, is it likely that the government can actually make these into healthy, profitable companies under Karzai, Volcker, or whoever they pick to be the autocrat of the industry?
Yeah, of course not. I mean, there's no way that pumping in $15 billion or even $100, they're talking about between $100 and $200 billion before they're over, is going to stop the hemorrhage of losing money. It's just been a history of bad decisions combined with the union concessions that they've always made to the unions in exchange for protection against foreign automobiles and so on, and also for inflation. I mean, the unions were one of the reasons why the money supply was pumped up in the 60s and 70s to pay the higher and higher wages. But I don't think that there is a prayer that any of this is going to make a difference. The cars that they're building right now are not the cars that Americans want to buy at a price that is remunerative to the companies.
You know, the other day I divided the amount of money that General Motors is projected to lose this year by the number of cars they're projected to sell this year. They're losing almost $4,000 per vehicle.
Wow.
And this, of course, is what the government wants to continue this. I mean, it's obviously like a wealth destruction machine, these three companies. Or at least they are, if they can't be in existence on their own.
That's a good way of putting it. It's causing a massive misallocation of resources on top of the recession that we're having. And in some sense, it's preventing the more efficient foreign-owned companies that produce here in the U.S. from getting access to resources, because those resources are being bid up in price by these inefficient companies because they're getting taxpayer money. So it's adding to our unemployment problems, it's adding to our recession problems, and it's adding to the tremendous capital consumption that has occurred in the last 10 years as a result of this low interest rate policy and this distortion of monetary calculation that have caused people to think they've had more wealth than they really do have, and to treat their houses and other assets, as people say, as ATM machines.
How long before people realize that a house is not actually an investment? I mean, that it's a consumption good, just like your refrigerator or your car, at least in a free market without the Federal Reserve and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and FHA and all the various subsidies to the real estate industry. You know, it's not an investment.
No, you're absolutely right. I think people are beginning to realize it to some extent, but the bailout is not allowing that realization to spread as fast as widely as it would without this bailout. Why is everyone saying that, well, you know, it's great that oil prices are falling on the one hand, but then turning around and saying it's awful that housing prices are falling? Both of them are adjusting to the realities of supply and demand. housing prices are not, as you said, housing is a consumption good. Its price is not going to continually rise, so that you know you can look to it as for your retirement. This is why the personal saving rate has fallen so much. They've substituted what they believe to be continuing increases in the wealth in their houses, that is Americans, for saving out of their current income. And this is what has caused this consumption binge. It's not because Americans themselves are autonomously piggish or greedy or want things right away. It's because they've been fooled into that sort of pattern of behavior by the low interest rates and which have induced the big bubbles in asset prices.
As Ms. Shedlock pointed out in a podcast the other day, all these politicians for years have been crying about affordable housing, wanting to have all kinds of subsidies to bring about alleged affordable housing. Here we actually have the market bringing about affordable housing, and they're doing everything they can to prevent it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are responsible people who did not get getting all of these different kinds of mortgages that they would not be able to pay off in the future if interest rates went up even a little bit. And yet these people are the ones that are being hurt. These are the people that are the unseen people. These are the forgotten men, okay, the and women, the middle class people that were and working people that were responsible with allocating their incomes, and they're the ones who will benefit from the lower housing price.
Joe, can we sum up all of government in some sense as that institution that makes it possible for the non-productive and the imprudent and the unsuccessful, except maybe at political manipulation, to live off the productive and the successful and the prudent, and therefore to diminish that conduct in society?
Yeah, I think that's clear. And people tend to think that the unproductive are the poor, but that's not necessarily true. I mean, people with lower incomes, if it weren't for many government programs, most of them would be very, very prudent. They have tended to be very, very prudent. And the fact that the Fed itself was pushing subprime mortgages on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and so on, giving people that could not afford at this point in time to purchase a house access to mortgage money, this has created a structure of bad incentives that have really wrecked our financial system and our economy and our standard of living. I really think Americans are going to wake up in a year or two and realize how much wealth has been destroyed and how poor they really are.
I'll never forget when Alicia Monell at the Boston Fed brought out a study in the early 1990s arguing that such things as credit ratings and assets and traditional factors of judging somebody's creditworthiness were actually irrelevant and illegitimate. And that, of course, the Fed set out to force banks and other lending institutions to ignore these things,
yep,
for privileged areas anyway. And the Fed pushed and created the whole subprime crisis.
Yeah, Monell's study was a key study. At the time, it was pointed out by many economists, even mainstream economists, that it was very, very flawed. And yet that became sort of the founding document for this whole push towards subprime mortgages. I mean, the Fed is really involved, hip deep in creating this crisis. In addition to, of course, the crazed Greenspan policy of pushing interest rates down near zero, and actually real rates were less than zero during the early part of this decade.
Which, of course, Greenspan recently said, well, really, he believed in the free market too much. That was his problem.
Yes. I mean, of course, he was talking there that about regulation, right, that there was too little regulation. What about there being too much money being pumped into the economy, which would not happen under a free market and a gold standard? He's never addressed that at all.
Well, Joe, I think you're exactly right about the fact that certainly a key aspect of this whole crisis is that all of us are going to be poorer, or at least those who aren't directly connected to the regime in D.C. or certain favored institutions of that regime. But what else is happening in terms of, say, this next year? What is it up to now? More than $8 trillion of bailouts. What's the effect of all this going to be?
The effect of all this is more wealth destruction, because government programs, as we know, tend to stimulate more consumption, which is exactly what you don't want during a recession when we're getting poorer. You want people to tighten their belts. You want people to put money aside. You want more money flowing through the loan markets to validate some of the past investments that could be bad investments. But if there's more saving to back them up, some of them can be saved. So I see the recession deepening in the next year or year and a half. And, if we have a New Deal regime imposed on us, then it could become chronic. And at the same time, by the way, as the money supply is going to increase over time, we're going to see, a stagflation as one possibility, okay? On the other hand, they might realize that they cannot, the regime, that is, that throwing money at these problems are not solving these problems. There's a small chance that the automobile bailout might not be passed. you know, if the Republicans in the Senate stand up for what they believe in or what they say they believe in, and that would be a good thing. But that's, you know, it's not clear yet until President-elect Obama takes over what we're going to be seeing, if we're going to be seeing a new deal.
Joe, if people want to understand about the background of what's happening, if they want to understand something about money and banking, what should they read?
They should definitely read Murray Rothbard's What Has Government Done to Our Money? And the newly reissued by the Mises Institute book by Rothbard on the mystery of banking. I think these are key books. And also a little pamphlet on the Austrian theory of the trade cycle, which has essays by Hayek, Mises, and Rothbard that are very accessible to the intelligent layperson.
Joe, what about that wonderful Rothbard History of Money and Banking from the colonial era to World War II that you edited, and that, in fact, Jeff Tucker told me yesterday is the best-selling history of money and banking in the country today?
Well, I'm gratified to hear that. That's a great book for people that are willing to just roll up their sleeves and look into where the Fed actually came from. There's a lot of historical data in there that is really revisionist in the good sense and that really has been presented nowhere else. And so we see that the history of central banking is a history of power being accumulated by the elites and of bamboozling the American public into thinking that without central banking, we're going to be subject to continual recessions and busts and so on, whereas Rothbard shows that it was really the bankers and the Wall Street elites and so on that pushed for this and pulled the wool over the public's eyes and making them think that it was something that was going to protect the public when, in fact, it was protecting the big bankers from the fallout from their irresponsible policies of increasing the money supply.
Joe, sounds like 2008.
Yeah, exactly.
It's exactly the same thing as in 1913.
Yes.
Well, Joseph Salerno, thanks for all you're doing to teach the truth to the American people. Take a look at Joe's archive on Mises.org and hope you'll come back and tell us more about what this gang of criminals is doing to us.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Lou.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.